Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung. Think global, act local. A new generation of architects is ready for takeoff, heading to change the world. This is not about satisfying one's ego or a new starting cult. It is more about improving our own environment. In fact, you need to deliver more input than the actual job demands. One of the studios included in this topic is Kibik & Christoph. The studio was founded in 2010 and meanwhile works with over 50 multidisciplinary architects from all over the world. Kibik & Christoph is based in Prague, Brno, and Bratislava. Their projects have received several awards and are known beyond national borders. We must talk about architecture because it creates the environment in which we all live. In today's podcast episode, we talk about strategies and experiments to establish a new generation's understanding of architecture. Our guests are Andrei Kibik and Michael Christoph from Kibik & Christoph Architects and Urban Designers. And we are Diane and Katharina from Jung.
Hello and a warm welcome to our Jung Architecture Talks podcast. Nice to have you with us, Andrei and Michael.
Hello. Thank you for inviting us.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you very much.
10 years ago, you started your own business, Kibik & Christoph Architects and Urban Designers. Of course, a lot has happened and developed since then. But what were the most important milestones for you?
The most important milestone was to set up our own practice, I would say. The decision to jump into the wild river right after graduation without no experience whatsoever.
No money whatsoever.
But actually we had something. We had a winning competition proposal. That was the engine to start. We were schoolmates at the faculty in TU Brno, TU Brin. That's the German name of our home city. And while studying, we did lots of competitions, student, but also the adult one. And in the last year of our studies, after Erasmus internships and more international experiences, we set up our collaboration. And during the diploma project, we applied for a competition in Bratislava, in Slovakia, for urban design and housing estate. I think it was like 2 weeks after diploma submission, we won the competition. So that was like a dream.
2 weeks. Wow.
I think the color on the diploma was still wet while winning the first prize in this open public architecture competition. That was the reason that we had the courage and energy and very little money from the prize money to set up our own studio.
Maybe that also shows that we were like never satisfied with doing what just like the school said us or something, you know, like we always tried more and we did more. So it was not enough for us to do just the diploma project. We were always like looking for something more. So we did this competition and at the end we didn't sign the contract because after some negotiations, it didn't end up in some real project. We already said to ourselves, like, let's try it, let's do it. So we set up the office and the contract was not signed at the end from this competition because we said to ourselves, like, let's try it, let's do our own office. We, of course, like then started to think about like how to get another work. Of course, we cannot rely just on one client or something. So we have to have more work and more clients and so on. So somehow like we tried to think about it and then we, for example, started to speak with one company, Coma Modular, which then somehow is our oldest real client. And we built with them a first real project. It was the cafeteria in Vizovice, in their factory, some kind of building, which is the new entrance and a restaurant and some facilities for the employees. With these guys, we already did the biggest amount of the projects. We won with them the Czech Pavilion and Expo in Milan. And that was some kind of milestone. We are speaking about milestones. Definitely the Czech Pavilion in Milan was one of the milestones when we also tried to do some project abroad. And for us as a young practice, it was very interesting. Actually, it was our second build project, and second build project was not in Czech Republic, but it was already in Milan. So it was for us like really crazy, and we were still under 30, and we built the Czech National Pavilion in Expo Milan. And the international jury, with our really big surprise, they awarded the pavilion with the bronze medal as the third best architecture on the Biennale. So for us, the start was somehow unbelievable. And then, of course, there were more and more projects and other things, but maybe this was the brief beginning.
That sounds like a dream for young architects. I mean, I remember actually the Czech Pavilion. I've been in Milan at the Expo. I remember the project, and I'm happy that we're able to meet here. How did you give form to your own business? I mean, that sounds, you think you have to be very brave at the beginning. Last time when we talked, you said maybe also a little naive.
Yeah, definitely. It's about naivety and the energy, I would say, and some kind of experience. Like for us, it was interesting. We are saying it to all our younger colleagues or students or to everyone. It's very nice to have different experience from domestic market or domestic offices, but also from international offices. And I think like it was very important for us that we both worked in some, let's say, maybe not correct word to say, like old fashioned offices in Czech Republic. And we saw their struggles and their way of their work and everything, you know, like, of course, we didn't see any contract, but we saw it from the perspective of the young guys, how it works, what doesn't work, and so on. And then because of the Erasmus program, we could make a comparison with the international offices. Andre was working with PPAG, PPAG in Vienna. I was working at BIC in Copenhagen. So we had experience with working with domestic and also international offices. And also every office was a different scale. The Czech offices were 2 people, 10 people. The PPAG was 20 people maybe, or BIC was at that time 120, 150 people. So this was very important for us, and it's still important till this day when we are speaking about like setting up international projects and teams, or if we are speaking about some kind of growth of the office. It was very important for us that we saw the hierarchies or the way how the offices can work in different sizes. So we somehow then trying to combine all the best aspects of all the sizes or the best aspects of different offices where we work together into our office. And we're not saying like our office is the best office in the world in organizational way or whatever way, but somehow we are trying to do it in combining the qualities of others and then plus our DNA together.
That sounds perfect. And I mean, you're already quite big.
Yeah, it grew like over these 10 years. It grew. Of course, like someone could tell us like, okay, you are 50 or 60. You are kind of big about how it could be. But it's not like from 1 year to another year. We have like kind of slow step-by-step process. And in every 10 years, there are 2-3 new colleagues or something. Some people are going to have their own practices or something, but fluctuation is not so big. And of course, like to create the office from one day to another day in 2 years in 50 people is crazy. But to make a 50 people office or 60 people office during 10 years with the slow fluctuation, it's something which is kind of possible.
In our preliminary talk, you said that in your opinion, many aspects of the built environment, not currently considered as heritage, are important to preserve and also display as a meaning of self-reflection for the society that built them. Can you explain your opinion on this, giving an example of a current project of yours, maybe?
Nowadays, many buildings are taken not as a heritage or as in quality buildings. We know that, for instance, here in Central European context, there's a big issue, buildings from 50s, 60s, 70s, from the brutalism era, and it's always related to the communistic period of the territory. But those buildings were done by great architects. Those buildings were done by great materials, in the collaboration. The architects did those buildings in collaboration with great artists. It doesn't mean that there was no democracy, that there was no quality. It was a very problematic time. but there were personalities and there were great authors. And I think it's a topic of even Germany and even London. I know that the city has a huge number of brutalistic architecture as the National Theater or Barbican. And they kind of like it, but the majority doesn't understand the quality of those buildings that much as we do. And I think the importance of practicing architects is to recognize the quality, to understand how to save the buildings, actually, while not demolishing them, but trying to explain the owners and the clients and the municipalities that this is the quality, this is the building we should keep and maintain, and not to pretend that the period of 40 years in the Eastern Bloc doesn't exist, but also to advocate the brutalistic architecture as entire big topic we should take into consideration. We have two projects regarding this topic, and the most recent one is a bus station in Brno. That's a square. One side of the square is over 100 meters, and it's a huge steel concrete structure, which is lifted above the ground. Under the structure are the platforms for buses, and on top of the structure, there are parking places for the buses. So the structure is enormous, it's huge. And to demolish this structure is firstly against what I already said, because we think that the structure had an author. The structure was designed by a great architect in the collaboration with a great artist. But also to demolish such a huge structure is extremely unsustainable because it's made out of concrete and steel. And just to erase and build something new is against another topic we have to deal with, and that's the CO2 footprint, etc. So we rather try to find the qualities in the existing than to demolish and build something new.
I mean, it's something about sustainability, no? We have this discussion in Germany also, even though we're not talking about brutalist buildings, but keeping buildings who have the quality and just like renew them and transform them into a future project, no? And not like, as you said, demolish them. But the brutalist buildings, I mean, as you mentioned it, there are so many in London especially in London. But I also visited some in Israel and all over the world. So, I mean, it's definitely kind of a quality building which remains until today, even though many people might hate it somehow because it's so...
It's so grayish and it's so concrete. But I think we have to explain to the laymen and to the majority that there is a quality. Because those buildings are designed to the very deep details. And we in the studio, we love them because that's unbelievable what in that period was possible to build.
Absolutely. So how do you perceive these cultural and architectural heritage within your practice?
We are not trying to be new revolutionaries or something, you know, like we somehow think like some kind of new continuity has to come and not like to this idea of always breaking someone's older things is a good idea. What our generation is thinking a lot is about the responsibility to the environment, to our nature, to our planet, to our clients, to everything, you know, like just not to do only crazy things or crazy expensive statues or whatever. As maybe in some previous times, maybe some architects were doing. But I think it's really the time of to be responsible. And in this kind of topic of the responsibility, there is a lot of other things. And it's also like this, you know, like not only to be revolutionary and to damage old buildings only and so on. Responsibility is definitely part of the sustainability. Like sustainability, in other words, for us, which maybe we like it more, the word of responsibility, than other words for like sustainability, is the same topic, you know? Just like to be responsible is the topic of architecture, and it should be always the topic of architecture. And if it's more and less green or whatever, it doesn't matter, you know? So then in this topic, of course, we are trying to work with some old buildings and we are trying to transform them into the new use. We are trying to reconstruct this bus terminal in Brno, or we did other project, this transformation project in Znojmo, where there was some trafostanica. It's a building for like electric station or something, electricity, where it's transformed to other grid. It was built in the historical brewery next to the cathedral and so on. It was crazy that these guys, they built it, this building in such a context in 70s or 80s. But we are saying like, okay, it's not like the good idea to destroy it. Maybe somehow we can sustain the building and put it to the next level because it's there. It was built there. It has some kind of quality of the bricks and something, but we can totally change it into the new quality and somehow level it to the new context. Maybe I'm speaking too much about just one word, and this word is responsibility. And basically that's something what our generation is trying to do, maybe, or trying to solve or speak about it.
First of all, you were chased by projects, then you picked out the best of the best. What is the secret of your success? Is it something like don't sit around waiting for commissions?
Yes, don't sit around and wait for commissions. Many our commissions were by self-invitation. For instance, the bus station transformation was self-initiated project because the condition of the bus station was terrible. Even a year ago, it looked like a junk space. The conditions were really, really, I would say, unbelievable. Actually, the bus station was serving more than 30,000 passengers per day. That's the biggest bus station in the Czech Republic. And it looked like from different century. So we tried to, actually, we made a sketch like 7 years ago, 6 years ago by our own. And we submitted the sketch to the owner because while searching who's the owner of the bus station, because we thought that that's a city and it wasn't city, the bus station is owned by a private equity. What's the result of a wild privatization in the 90s? And while searching the owner, while sending the sketch of a very simple cleaning and painting the structure and putting some simple lights, that was the sketch about, nothing else. We recognized that the problem is somewhere else. The problem was that because of the privatization, the owner privatized this land, not because of running the bus station, but because of future potential of development of this central located area. And because it was not that easy to demolish the structure and it was not that easy to move the bus station somewhere else, even within last 30 years, it was impossible. He kept the bus station and he ran the business of the buses. But the business was not strong enough to maintain the huge structure properly and even to reconstruct the huge structure in any manner. And while recognizing the topic that there's a financial problem and there's this different ownership than we thought, we realized that it's not about architecture only, but it's about helping to the owner in search of funds and money for the reconstruction. So we recommend to the owner, a guy whose job is searching money from public funds and European funds. And at the end of the day, we realized that there's an enormous program from European Union for refurbishing such a situations as we had in Brno. And the fund was over 70% of the entire investment. And suddenly, we realized that the change could happen. Then the client came to the architects. He asked the architect for the project. We did a project and completion is set to the spring next year. Then the journey was pretty simple. He had enough money to make the change. I think that's the role of an architect, not to be only a form giver. The role of an architect in any society is to recognize the problem, recognize the diagnose as a doctor, you know. You have to first make a diagnosis and then to find a cure. And the cure is the project, but the diagnosis is sometimes more complicated than the design or the project itself.
And again, you acted very responsible. So in the end, everything is about responsibility.
Definitely, because we as architects, we care about where we live. That's a fundamental topic of our studio or all the architects, I would say. And in urban scale or in the bigger scale, big scale projects, it's sometimes very complicated to recognize what's the major problem. But I think we have to care about the topics. We have to be curious and we never have to give up by it's impossible because we have no money. That's not an answer for us. There's always a way how to manage it. And to make the project is then the cherry on the cake.
That's a nice picture. Let's take a closer look at the architectural scene in the Czech Republic and Slovakia, because we, I would say here in Germany, do not know that much about it. What moves you there at the moment?
There are different things, and of course it's also a complicated question to answer. The situation is different a little bit in Czech Republic and Slovakia, because like, for example, in Czech Republic, there are really a lot of public competitions, so they understood somehow that the public projects doesn't need to be run only as tenders for the smallest price or something. It was the biggest shame of the system. They understood that they can do the different types of the architectural competitions, and they can then build something as a result of a competition designed by the architects with a very high level of the standard of the architecture.
If I remember it correctly, you mentioned that all the competitions are open, so any architect can take part, no?
Like public open competitions, yes, they're open basically, and everyone can join and can win it, even students. But they have to be covered with the architect who is licensed and is collaborating with them. And it was our way how to do the adult competitions during the school, to do these competitions together somehow with some experienced architect. So, but basically the question is like, do two countries are a little bit different? The nice thing is that we are not like Switzerland or France or something where everything is basically done, let's say, like all the stations and so on. There is really huge potential of work for us because there is a lot of brownfields, new city halls, new bus stations, train stations and everything. So there's still a lot of topics. So it's very nice to be there. There's still plenty of work for architects for next 50 years at least. So it's a little bit different from maybe Western Europe, that a lot of these things are done. When I was in Belgium, for example, and I was studying there, I saw that they are doing mostly the family houses or interiors or something. But here, a lot of studios can do big projects. Of course, there are private and public projects, and all the sectors, they have a lot of different rules and so on. But there is big potential of various projects. And therefore, it's also connected with our DNA that we are not specialized just for one typology or something. What we like to do is to design a city or the new lively neighborhoods or whatever, and it's not like done by one typology or something. Actually, we hate monofunctional projects, or not hate, but like we're always like trying to see the architecture as multi-purpose use buildings and multi-purpose way of living and so on. So basically, there is a lot of things which could happen in over the next 50 years. The thing is that there is a lot of really good architects from different generations, super young, but also older architects. All young architects, they were working in some Western studios and they came back and they set up their new offices and so on. The only thing which we somehow don't understand is that these architects or the scene is not communicating its work to outside. It's kind of a very close scene. We still don't know why, because of the language barrier maybe, or there are no traces of some kind of large communication or collaboration in the past. We were always like Czechs and Slovaks. There were, of course, some kind of traces towards Austria, like architects from Brno were working in Austria. The only trace maybe of some kind of communication between the nations were in Austria-Hungarian Empire, like Adolf Loos was born in Czech Republic, and then
in Brno,
and then he gave to world architecture in Vienna. Maybe it's also about this. If we would try to workshop about this theme a little bit, there is not so much traces of international collaboration in the past. So maybe that's also it. Of course, like Dutch architects, they were like sailors, and all the sailing nations, they have it somehow in their DNA to sell it as a next product to everyone, to Chinese, to Indians, to whoever. And it's something like we've never been sailors. For Czech and Slovaks, it's somehow complicated or not in a DNA to go around the entire world and to design architecture.
I would like to know something. If you could choose to have lunch with a person who inspires you, who would that be?
You start, Michal.
With Andrei, because we didn't have a time. No. Like we have kind of like a lot of time. Maybe like in the last year, it was also sometimes complicated to communicate between us because we were like on different spots and so on because of the COVID. everything is more around the table. And now also we have more time for our families and for other things. So, but it's not about the question. I'm trying to find a diplomatic answer.
Doesn't matter if dead or alive, Andrei.
I read those books about Adolf Loos, his second and third wife. I would appreciate his opinion on those books because actually both descriptions are very similar. And I would be super curious if he would in any chapter agree. Because while living in Austria, while working for Anna und Georg from Pepe AG, I was spending a lot of time in Loos Bar in downtown of Vienna in the city center. I really like Adolf Loos because of his origins and then his architecture approach, which I try to get super deeply into me while drinking in the bar. So I think Adolf Loos would be the personality.
I had some time to think, so Steve Jobs would be very interesting to have a lunch or something. Václav Havel in Czech Republic would be very interesting because like he was the main person of the change in the Czechoslovakia. And I think like this would be a real honor to speak with him and to spend some time with him as a person. To speak about like the views on today's society and where the entire society is heading and so on. That could be very, very interesting. And I think I would just listen, maybe ask a few questions and then just only listen. And from architect Ram Koolhaas, who is like someone who in the past and his books, he influenced our generation a lot and our work as well. I don't know, maybe it's so workaholic that it will be just like, I don't know, espresso.
It's about the visions and the visionaires we've been talking about in the last sentences. I would like to thank you both. It was a really great pleasure to talk to you and, of course, listening to you. Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Also, many thanks to our listeners. If there are topics or speakers you are especially interested in, then please let us know at architects@jung.de. We heartily invite you to the upcoming Jung Architecture Talks podcast. Look them up on jung.de/architects and tune in.